Okay, we're doing it again. I was gonna do one chapter, but some of these chapters are short as hell, including the first chapter that's not even a page long. So, two whole chapters, maybe sometimes three, is gonna be better. It also won't take as long. So that's good to say. That's good to see. Good to have. Part one. This is a two-parter. This is a two-parter. Part one, chapter one. Lolita, light of my life, fire of my loins, my sin, my soul. Lolita, the tip of the tongue taking a trip of three steps down the palate to tap at three on the teeth. Lolita. She was low, plain low in the morning, standing 4 feet 10 in one sock. She was Lola in slacks. She was Dolly at school. She was Dolores on the dotted line. But in my arms, she was always Lolita. Did she have a precursor? She did. Indeed, she did. In point of fact, there might have been no Lolita at all had I not loved, one summer, a certain initial girl child in a princedom by the sea. Oh, when? About as many years before Lolita was born as my age was that summer. You can always count on a murderer for a fancy prose style. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, exhibit number one is what the seraphs, the misinformed, simple, noble-winged seraphs, envied. Look at this tangle of thorns. I don't like this. I'd rather read pornography, you know that? I'd rather be reading, like, actual, real pornography than, this, but it's fine. Chapter 2. I was born in 1910 in Paris. My father was a gentle, easygoing person, a salad of racial genes, a Swiss citizen of mixed French and Austrian descent, with a dash of the Danube in his veins. Danube? I'm going to pass around in a minute some lovely, glossy blue picture postcards. He owned a luxurious hotel on the Riviera. His father and two grandfathers had sold wine, jewels, and silk, respectively. At 30, he married an English girl, daughter of Jerome Dunn, the alpinist, and granddaughter of two Dorset parsons, experts in obscure subjects, paleopodology and Aeolian harps, respectively. My very photogenic mother died in a freak accident. Picnic, lightning, when I was three, and save for a pocket of warmth in the darkest past, nothing of her subsists within the hollows and dells of my memory, over which, if you can still stand my style, I am writing under observation, the sun of my infancy had set. Surely you all know those redolent remnants of day suspended, with the midges about some hedge in bloom, or suddenly entered and traversed by the rambler at the bottom of a hill in the summer dusk. A furry warmth, golden midges. My mother's elder sister, Sybil, whom a cousin of my father's had married and then neglected, served in my immediate family as a kind of unpaid governess and housekeeper. Somebody told me later that she had been in love with my father, and that he had lightheartedly taken advantage of it one rainy day and forgotten it by the time the weather cleared. I was extremely fond of her, despite the rigidity, the fatal rigidity, of some of her rules. Perhaps she wanted to make of me, in the fullness of time, a better widower than my father. Aunt Sybil had pink-rimmed azure eyes and a waxen complexion. She wrote poetry. She was poetically superstitious. She said she knew she would die soon after my 16th birthday, and did. Her husband, a great traveler in perfumes, spent most of his time in America, where eventually he founded a firm and acquired a bit of real estate. I grew a happy, healthy child in a bright world of illustrated books, clean sand, orange trees, friendly dogs, sea vistas, and smiling faces. Around me, the splendid Hotel Marana revolved as a kind of private universe, a whitewashed cosmos within the blue greater one that blazed outside. From the aproned pot scrubber to the flannel potentate, everybody liked me, everybody petted me. Elderly American ladies leaning on their canes listed towards me like towers of Pisa. Ruined Russian princesses who could not pay my father bought me expensive bonbons. Mon cher petit papa took me out boating and biking, taught me to swim and dive and water ski, read to me Don Quixote and Les Mirabelles. I don't know how to, I don't speak French, fucking. And I adored and respected him and felt glad for him whenever I overheard the servants discuss his various lady friends, beautiful and kind beings who made much of me and cooed, shed precious tears over my cheerful motherlessness. I attended an English day school a few miles from home, and there I played rackets and fives and got excellent marks, and was on perfect terms with schoolmates and teachers alike. The only definite sexual events that I can remember as having occurred before my 13th birthday, that is, before I first saw my little Annabelle, were a solemn, decorous, and purely theoretical talk about pubertal surprises in the rose garden of the school with an American kid, the son of a then-celebrated motion picture actress whom he seldom saw in the three-dimensional world, and some interesting reactions on the part of my organism to certain photographs, Pearl and Umbra, with infinitely soft partings, in Pichon's sumptuous La Beauté Humaine that I had filched from under a mountain of marble-bound graphics in the hotel library. Later, in his delightful, debonair manner, my father gave me all the information he thought I needed about sex. This was just before sending me, in the autumn of 1923, to Élysée in Lyon, where we were to spend 3 winters. But alas, in the summer of that year, he was touring Italy with Madame d'Arr and her daughter, and I had nobody to complain to, nobody to consult. How was that? Is this fun? This is great for me.